When most people think back to the first grade, they think about their teacher or the cookies in the cafeteria. I remember going into the bathroom and counting the tiles on the ceiling. I was arranging them in my mind in groups of three or five. I can still see it in my mind. And I noticed that the tiles on the ceiling were big, and I wanted them to come out in odd numbers of three or five. And when they came out that way, it relieved the anxiety that I felt. I was feeling an anxiety even at that time, and I didn't really know why. I knew it was strange, but I didn't know it was obsessive compulsive disorder. Obsessive compulsive disorder takes many forms. It can be all about cleanliness. It can be about counting in numbers, which mine has always kind of centered around counting in numbers. I couldn't pass a pile of coins. People who left coins in the floor of their car or in their ashtray, it just really made me anxious. It to the point of I had to do something. And I didn't know why. I mean, it had really taken over my life. You could have 3 coins or you could have 50 coins. I had to turn them all heads up and make a geometrical design out of them, a lovely geometrical design, using pennies, dimes, quarters, whatever was there. I had to make it look nice. I had to be able to manage it. Actually, I have 3 different diagnoses: obsessive compulsive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder. I also have major depressive disorder. The depression really started a lot earlier in my life. I had a lot of different things happen to me. We call them triggers over a long period of time, but I could still function. There are different degrees of depression, mild or medium or severe. It goes on. Mine turned out to be severe depression at an age of 42 when I finally couldn't function anymore. I was working on a job as a loan officer, a mortgage loan officer, and the first thing I really noticed was I couldn't concentrate any longer. Things that were automatic to me, I couldn't remember the programs that I was very knowledgeable about, and I'd always been very successful, and all of a sudden I couldn't complete a thought. That was the worst part of it. I would just be talking like I'm talking to you, and all of a sudden I couldn't think of what I was supposed to say. And it was just like you're driving along and your car fell off of a bridge that washed out, and there's nothing you could do about it. But with my job, all of a sudden I couldn't do the job, and I had some physical illnesses, some other physical illnesses that just happened. I was a single mom with 2 kids going 100 miles an hour to ballet practice and football practice just like everybody else does, and then all of a sudden I couldn't do anything. I could not take care of my children. My son was 6, my daughter was 11, and I had to totally move in with my mother. I was 42 at the time. My mom hadn't had me there since I was 18. I had to move home. I moved into a room there, and I knew that my life was over. My children had different dads. They went to live with their different dads and had to be separated. And the thing that always makes me sad is thinking, you know, at that time, you know, no more little girls' slumber parties, no more football practice. And I felt like I died because I could not take care of my children. And I didn't know what happened to me. Just moving back to my mother's for the first time since I was 18 and I was 42, that's devastating. If you're not already depressed, that's gonna put you there, knowing that I was not independent. Someone else was having to take care of me. And being in my room, isolated, away from the world, I didn't have to deal with anybody else. Didn't wanna have to talk on the phone because I didn't understand what was wrong with my mind. I couldn't make my mind work. I couldn't figure out how to get out of this thing that I was in. It felt as if I was in a grave trying to dig my way out. What time you don't spend asleep, which is the only escape that you have, you're crying, and nothing is worth anything. You don't want to be there. You don't want to be worthless. You don't want to be hopeless. You just want to disappear. And it's devastating. It eats away at your self-esteem. It takes away all the pride you ever had in yourself. And you understand and contemplate suicide because it seems like a viable option. Just the thought of having to get out of bed, walk, you know, across the hall to the bathroom, brushing my teeth, brushing my hair, taking a bath was too much trouble, and you don't want anyone to see you. I didn't want to interact or talk to anybody. The only people I cared about talking to were my children, and I couldn't talk to them without crying. So imagine the worst day of your life when you're sick, you can't think of anything productive to do or say, you think you look horrible, you're disgusting, and you stay there for 6 years. It's like death. It's like being dead, but you just haven't crossed over yet. It's like being in a vacuum, being in a room that all the air and all the life, all the fun, all the beauty, anything that would bring pleasure has been sucked out. It's exactly what it feels like. I got to see my children whenever I wanted to, but all I did was cry, promise them it was going to get better, and then, you know, go back in and just stay in the room. Because if I went out, somebody was going to ask me what was wrong. You know, what's wrong? Why are you depressed? You don't have anything to be depressed about. At the time, I knew nothing about mental illness, and neither did anyone around me, and anyone who mentioned a mental illness. My father had told us that no people in our family were crazy. So, you know, that was something that never even entered my mind. How do you get help? How does your family, how do your friends or anyone else, how do they get you to the point where they realize you need help and that you'll accept it? And mine was because after 6 years, the depression had worked its way down through my body. It starts in your brain, but then your other organs in your body stop functioning because you're not functioning. And I was repeating my symptoms to doctors over and over and over. They weren't listening to what I was saying. They were looking at all the physical things that they could see, but they weren't looking at my brain. Finally, a very intelligent lady gynecologist listened to what I was saying and realized that maybe the two were connected. My brain was having a lot to do with all the physical problems that I was having. I had been wondering what was wrong with me for over 6 years and thinking that my life was over. I really wanted to die. I didn't want to kill myself. I just wanted the pain to go away. I figured I was never going to be any use to anyone again, so why couldn't I just be taken from the face of the earth? After I found out there was a diagnosis, it was good for me to be able to speak to people who said, it's not your fault. This is not something that your family did. It is an actual chemical imbalance. There is something, you have a brain disorder, and there's something we can do about it. When I found that out, I got on my medication, and it was very important that you take it at the same time every day. Even, you know, though I was accustomed to sleeping most of the time, I knew that that was one thing that was very important that I had to wake up for, to live for. That was my job during the day when I began, just to take my medication. And it took me 6 to 8 weeks before it really took hold, and I noticed a difference, and my family noticed a difference. But I can give you a perfect example of the first time. I think that recovery from your disease comes in flashes, like light. It's something will happen. It's like an aha moment or a light bulb goes off. All of a sudden you feel better. And the first thing I noticed is when you're living with major depressive disorder, everything is in shades of gray. There are no colors in your life because that would mean something happy and you don't really notice happiness. You're just, there may be colors all around, but you don't see it. One of the first times, this was after about 8 weeks, I was able to drive myself to the doctor. My mom had had to drive me to Parkland Hospital every week whenever I had therapy. Finally, I was able to drive myself, which was a good indication something was changing. But I was driving down the tollway. All of a sudden, I looked up and I noticed the trees were green. And that seems pretty simple, but to me, it was just mystifying. I thought, I forgot that the trees are green and they were so beautiful. It made me smile. I may start crying here because that was a big moment for me. Sharing that with my therapist was so important. And when my disorders were diagnosed, my therapist referred me to NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. NAMI has helped me. It would be impossible for me to be where I am at the stage of recovery that I am without NAMI. They've taught me to recognize the symptoms and the things that are happening to me that are going to bring on the depression. Because even if I'm taking my medication and I'm going to my therapist and I'm going to my support groups, you have to be aware those things can still happen. I can still have an episode. That's just how it is. It's not something you can totally control. So NAMI's helped me to be aware of those things, and I feel when it's coming. It's a peer-to-peer thing, is what we call it. It would be hard for a lot of people to talk about the things that happen, the symptoms and the weird things that you do that nobody else understands. But when you're talking to someone else in NAMI, in one of my support groups, and I don't even have to finish a sentence. They'll say, I know, that happened to me too. And this is what I did to make it better. And that's what we do to each other. That's why we believe peer-to-peer education is so important because, yes, we have to have the doctor. Yes, we have to have medication and the therapy. We have to have each other to talk to because we understand. And that is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to tell people I have lost everything before. I lost my children, my job, my car, my home, my money. And I read somewhere, I'm not sure who said it, but sometimes you have to lose everything to see who you are with nothing. And when I had nothing, I liked the person a lot better. And I've been able to build myself back and learn things that I should have learned the first time around. And that's why I call it a gift. It's brought me in touch with people I would never have met that are my dear friends. I know that I've made a difference in people's lives. My children are so proud of me. My son's 20 now. My daughter's 25. I have a 16-month-old grandson now. If I had died then, if I had killed myself then, when I didn't want to live, I wouldn't have him in my life. And NAMI has really done that for me. I was driving down the street, and all of a sudden, I had a really peaceful feeling. I wasn't having negative things going through my mind. Not that I don't have problems. I have problems, but I wasn't thinking about those. I was actually smiling, and it occurred to me, this must be what it feels like to be happy. I'm happy. And I hadn't had that feeling, just an absence of negative thoughts. That's so important because that's all I, you know, that's been going through your head, and they go away a little bit at a time. But even after all these years, that was a flash for me. That's big. I was happy. And to me, that's what NAMI has taught me. A lot of the things that have brought me happiness have been the opportunities that NAMI has given me for education. And they believe in education. And if you're willing to try or to put yourself into something 100%, which is what I try to do, there's no limit to the things that you can learn. And I've learned how to help other people. I tell my story strictly, not because it's a pleasant story, but I can go over that story over and over again, tell it over and over, somebody different is going to hear it. They're going to learn the things I learned from therapy. We have a lot of doctors who refer people to us right when they're out of the hospital. Maybe they haven't had therapy yet. Those are the people who need help understanding what's happened to them. If they're just out of the hospital, if they just had an episode and they're still seeing the doctor, they're still fresh, it's a good place to go to start those steps, because everybody is not like me. I went to the internet, I went to the library, I did whatever I could to get information. Not everybody is going to do that. So if they come to a NAMI meeting, to a support group, which first of all is a big deal, just getting out of bed, getting dressed, and going somewhere where you're going to see other people, that is monumental. That is so hard to do. So when you get there and you realize there are other people just like you who are, some of us are just learning about the symptoms and the things, the side effects and the different things to do. Some of us are further down the road, but those are the ones who help the new people coming in. So NAMI is when my recovery really kicked in to gear, and all the things I've done since then just build on that recovery. I'm on a mountain now as far as productivity is concerned. I've been at the bottom and now I've changed that, and everyone can do that has a mental illness. We just have to realize you might get sick a little bit again, but if you've had education, which NAMI gave me, I can see that that's coming and I can head it off, like I mentioned earlier. You can head that off, you can know what's coming, and you can adjust yourself, know that it's gonna pass. You're gonna get better again. Those are the things that I learned in therapy that helped me the most about guilt and my value as a human being. Everyone on this earth is valuable, even if we have a mental illness. And I think we can change those things. It's gonna take a long time. It's gonna change people's attitude, the stigma attached to it. I hope that when people see me, the first thing they think of is not mental illness, because that's not who I am. I am a mother and I'm a grandmother. I'm Alice Clark. NAMI helped me understand that my illness is a mental illness, but it isn't me.
One in five adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.